This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
Jenny hit Austin. Damn, she loves this town. She was coming up for air after living underground. She had a nasty reputation as a girl who lied. When she made the declaration, country music has died. He said, it's alright, it's okay, it doesn't make a difference to me anyway. It doesn't make a difference to
fans,
me
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Hello, fans worldwide out there. Phil here, as always, on this broadcast, talking music, life, and the struggles therein, and so much more. Welcome, welcome. Oh, man, it's the holiday season, coming off a great Thanksgiving week. Very, very excited. It's my favorite time of year. I've always talked about my disdain for work and recording, etc. In the extreme heat, I always adhered strictly to the belief that rock and roll is meant to be played in cold weather climes. Sure, the full band has been seen so many times, rocking in 110 degree heat on some festival stage, yes indeed, or in your backyard or somewhere, and we love it, don't get me wrong. But it always feels a little bit better with some jeans and boots, as I wear anyway, no matter the temperature. But jeans and boots, a hat, a scarf, jacket, always goes a little better with rock and roll. You know, the Jayhawks, Bob Dylan, Wilco, they all come from like Minnesota and Chicago and stuff. A lot of those bands we love so much. Which gets us into this first segment here. I'm looking on the Granada Theater website, Dallas, Texas, where we have played so many times. We're going to be playing with Charlie Robinson there in January, so mark your calendars. I think that's January 13th. I don't have my calendar in front of me. The full band playing with Charlie Robinson, so check that out. We haven't been at the Granada in about a year or so, so good times there. Great to get back. So I was looking at the Granada Theater website. I come across a vision, something I wasn't expecting to see, that my favorite band, really in the last several years, the Jayhawks, are coming to the Granada Theater on a Wednesday night in November. You know, we've played their stuff on the show a lot. They're from Minneapolis. The first record came out, Hollywood Town Hall, early 90s. A alt-country kind of songwriter, Beatle-ish thing that was played on all the cool radio stations when I was living in Austin, you know, KGSR down there and the like. You know what? An adult album alternatives type of band. The Jayhawks, man. Anybody, any great songwriter, you know, kind of plugged into that kind of stuff, was a huge Jayhawks fan in my orbit. And certainly the Jayhawks were prominently played in the band Van, the old band Van, when Ryan Lynch was playing bass and Jason Stolle on drums. So this was, I don't know, you know, the early aughts, early 2000s. The full band, the three of us, Stolle and Lynch, would play a gig. We'd get in the van and kick on those Jayhawks records, man, like Smile and Rainy Day Music, Tomorrow the Green Grass. And it was just kind of the soundtrack for all this. Well, so needless to say, when I see the Jayhawks, they've reformed. They'd broken up for a while. I don't know how old they are. I guess they all got to be late 40s, maybe early 50s. So they've reformed. They've made a new record called Mockingbird Time, I believe. I just listened to some stuff online. Very cool stuff. Very jangly. Jayhawks kind of led by Gary Loris, the horn-rim glasses, tall, lanky guy playing the old SG through a Vox amp. Just, you know, he was the guy that said he's not into technique of guitar playing. He's into tone. No, wait. Feel, sloppiness, and tone, I believe was his quote. I'm not into technique. I'm into feel, sloppiness, and tone. I've just sort of ascribed that to my style of playing. Feel, sloppiness, and tone. That just sort of describes what I do on the guitar, or seek to, anyway. So we're big Gary Loris fans, Jayhawks fans. So I send out a kind of a... I've stayed in touch, certainly, with Jason and Ryan through the years. They both live up here in the DFW area. I said, man, let's try to get together with the Jayhawks. Stolly says, way ahead of you. Already got my tickets. So I call Lynch. So we have this big full band. Phil Perch and the full band. The old aught full band. Reunion at the Jayhawk show. And man, what a great, great scene it was. I hadn't been to the Granada as a spectator in a long time. And this was the first time I've ever purchased a ticket for a concert. Gosh, maybe in the last several years. I think someone bought me that Tom Petty ticket I talked about a while back. A couple years ago. When was he here? I don't know. 3 or 4 years ago. 3 years ago, maybe. So I gladly plopped down my $30 for the Jayhawks. Go in there. A good turnout. Very good turnout. Gosh, I was the youngest guy there, I think. Me and the full band. Kind of an older crowd. Which was good. Very calm, reverent. Everyone just watching the stage. And man, it was fantastic. They just kind of came out there. We're playing. I enjoyed it. They're fantastic. The Jayhawks. Love it. And, I don't know. I'm not sitting here trying to convince all of you to go out and listen to the Jayhawks, although you should, especially their records, Smile and Rainy Day Music, would be my high recommendation. If you haven't been turned on to their music, check it out. But I had a thought as I came on that night, and people were asking, how was the show? How was the show? Were you awesome? Were you screaming, though? And I had a somewhat disconcerting thought, maybe? I don't know, or maybe it's profound in some way. I'll share it with you. You know, when I went to see bands when I was first starting out, when I was maybe 20 years old in college or whatever, and went and saw, you know, those bands I talk about all the time, David Garza in Austin and Soul Hat, and I was in some crowded bar and those bands were playing, it was loud and we were drinking and yeah, right. I wasn't standing there watching the band, thinking to myself, it's nice that they love what they do, and they're playing their music, and I'm standing here appreciating that. Well done, fellas. No, I say. That was not what I was thinking or what I was doing in the crowd. I sat there in complete awe and complete disbelief and basking in the knowledge that I would be able to tell my grandchildren that I was there when this guy got started. I was watching David, and I just said, man, you know, when he is selling out the Cotton Bowl 3 nights in a row in the very near future, I'll be able to say, you know what? I saw that guy at the Cactus Cafe on the UT campus with like 100 people, and it was the greatest show I ever saw. I was there when it started. I mean, David himself, I'm using him as an example. He himself was maybe 22 or something like that, and he was playing the show, make no mistake, just as Soul Hat was when they were in their young 20s, early 20s, and I was too watching them. They were playing with a fervor, with a purpose, as we all do, that said, you know, today the Black Cat Lounge on 6th Street, tomorrow the Frank Irwin Center in Austin. There was no question about it. They were meeting with labels and managers, had people hunting them down. The shows were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's a sense at those early shows, my early exposure, anyone's early exposure to live music as a young person in a club where you are witnessing history in the making. You are privy to some band that not everyone's privy to, but in no doubt, in due time, will be gigantic. And you'll be able to say, you were there. There's an excitement. I think that's true. If I'm really honest with myself, what was I thinking at those shows? There's no doubt that that was a big part of it. And I guess what I miss is, and I'm not blaming the Jayhawks for this, or David or Soul, or anybody like that. As you get a little older, and you do it for some 20 years or whatever I've done it from. And you get, you say, man, I don't go to shows anymore. I'm going to go check out this show. And so I go there and I am very excited. And I was not let down, make no mistake. However, I was not at the Granada Theater in the mindset of, I am witnessing the rise of the greatest rock band in history. And in turn, the Jayhawks themselves, or any band that's their age and been through what they've been through, they're not on stage playing their set with the purpose of world domination, changing everyone's lives. On some level, of course, that's why we all do it. You want to have an effect on people, etc. But there's a little more of the attitude of, it's great to be back in Dallas. We haven't been here in a long time. It's just nice to see that people remember our records. We're very proud of those records. And to be able to come back and share them with you and see everybody again, it's really great. It's a magical, it has its own kind of magic. But I don't know. It just can't be like it was, I guess. I mean, that makes kind of good old days syndrome for me. But I wonder if just the live concert experience does diminish as you get older a little bit. I mean, because I go to these, I don't know, the Rolling Stones or something. There's dudes, you know, with gray hair behind me, just screaming and whooping it up, smoking a doobie. I mean, they believe. They're all in. And I don't know. I guess there's some people that still do that at a Jayhawk show or any kind of band show. But for me, I don't know if I'm different or if I'm cynical or if I'm jaded. Although I'm enjoying the show, I am also kind of looking at the bass player going, man, I wonder if he's really into this stuff. You know, I wonder what keeps him up at night. You know, if he's just thinking, just get me home, or I don't want to play this song again, or has there just been some argument with the band backstage again? Has the tour been going well, or did they have a bad night in Houston last night? I don't know. I'm just, as a musician, I'm asking these questions because that's always what's going on when I'm on stage. There's just other stuff going on around it. So I guess that's just a product of just kind of getting older, a little more experience. You know, there's a lot more crap everybody's dealing with. And no one is under the idea anymore that they are on the way up, that they are setting about to change the world, that they are changing people's lives. And the audience is really no longer under the idea that they're seeing something that will no doubt be able to tell their grandchildren about. The difference between the Jayhawks and like the Rolling Stones, I mean, the Rolling Stones and those bands did change the world. Dylan, Elton John. So the Jayhawks are an interesting study, just a truly great band that certainly achieved success and respect. But, you know, there was no world domination there. They're working musician kind of guys. And I just wonder how that all sits, you know, with them on stage. Of course, they love playing their music, but just what their attitude is, you know, and what their purpose is for continuing. I'm always real, of course, we all love music, but I always want to know what that purpose is to continue. Because I always look for the purpose to keep going. You're always looking for something. And, you know, kind of like we talked with Nick Verzosa, who will be joining us here shortly again. Sit tight, everybody. You know, what propels you forward? If you know you're not going to have radio success and a major record deal, make tons of money, what keeps us all playing music? And it's easy for some guy with a great job to go, man, but you love what you do, man. That's awesome. That makes it worth it. You know, that's true, but it's easy for someone like that to say that, who has a great job and would love to make that same kind of money, but playing music, that's a great idea, but it's another to go out and keep it going when maybe there's just no payoff in the end anywhere else. So we all struggle to stay out there and keep going. Well, speaking of struggle and keeping it going, our good friend Nick Verzosa was here last week. He'll be joining us here again very shortly after this break. Stay tuned, folks. Oh, can you feel it in the air, folks? The chill, the briskness, the holidays are upon us, and that can only mean one thing. Hot damn tamales. I'm talking about hot damn tamales right here in Fort Worth, Texas, right over here on Magnolia. You're thinking, Phil, I don't live in Fort Worth. What am I supposed to do? Garbage. HotDamnTamales.com. Their main business is shipping gourmet, unique, homemade, fresh tamales all over the world, man. It's an enterprise they've got going on here. It's incredible. These tamales are big, they're gourmet, and they have some of the wildest, most intriguing, greatest flavors you can imagine. like try the beef tenderloin, jalapeno, and beer tamales. How about, you know, they got poblano chicken, the three cheese, barbecue brisket tamales. Fantastic, one of my favorites. Oh man, they've got the feta mushroom and spinach, I think it is. It's another one of my favorite. They got veggie, they got dessert tamales. They've got beef, pork, chicken, anything you can imagine. Just go to hotdamntamales.com. Look at the wonderful pictures they got on there. You just get a sense of what they're all about. And when you order it online, it's shipped fresh to your door, you know, vacuum sealed, frozen in a styrofoam pack, a custom styrofoam pack. All you do is you take them and poke a few holes in the plastic. They come bundled in little six packs, you know, like six tamales all together. Punch a few holes in that plastic they're wrapped in, steam them up on the stove in a few minutes. They thaw right out beautifully. Top them with a little salsa or chili or whatever you think, and just be in heaven. Also, please, when you make your order, man, right on there, find some way to communicate to them that you heard about it on the P2 podcast. Some of you ask all the time, Phil, how can I support the podcast? I listen to it all the time. You never ask us for money or anything. Hey, if you want to help me out, go to hotdamntamales.com, place an order, and then give them a phone call or send them an email or write something on your order that says, heard about it on the podcast, big fan of Phil Pritchett. He told me he loves Hot Damn Tamales, and that's why I'm coming to you. Help me out, fans, by helping yourself, setting your taste buds free with, as anything we do here at Trinidad, only the finest, most unique gourmet music and gourmet tamales, man. I'm a believer in Hot Damn Tamales. My friend Constantine and his family over there doing it so well, better than anyone else out there, man, in Fort Worth and online. HotDamnTamales.com. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, from Trinidad World Recording Studios here in Fort Worth. Speaking of Trinidad, the Trinidad Tribute EP has been released on iTunes and all digital outlets. Trinidad Tribute, Phil Pritchett and Rodney Parker doing REM. Five songs, $5. Go get it on iTunes. Amaze your friends with your knowledge of great alternative 80s and 90s rock and roll. This is mostly kind of the older REM stuff that me and Rodney did. Y'all heard the podcast where Parker came on here and challenged me to pull this thing off. Well, here it is. Well, speaking of pulling things off, man, we have pulled off having Nick Verzosa, singer-songwriter, Texas rock and roller, come back this week to continue his conversation, telling us all about his work and his trials, his perspective on everything he's doing out there in the music business. We always like to get information. So Nick Verzosa is here again this week.
Can't get away.
Cannot get away. He just every time I start recording the next episode here, the last couple weeks, just that little knocking at the door. There's Nick, man. He's coming back in here. Nick came in here, man, 4 or 5 years ago with his first band, John's Guns. A bunch of bumbling guys just in there, you know, getting their guitar cables wrapped around their feet and everything and tripping over the mics and everything. I'm like, oh, gosh. But made a fun record way back then. Well, that was when I was just getting my room and my producing feet wet. But fun songs and fun times. So, man, now he's made a couple records with the great Walt Wilkins, an EP, his new one. It's called She Only Loves Me. Sounds awesome. I listened to it on Facebook the other day. So congratulations, man. There's that seagull guitar, man, on the back.
Dude, still...
Still have that.
Still have that, man.
It's got some war wounds on it.
It has been loyal for the past 4 or 5 years.
Keep an eye on it, man. It'll get stolen at some time.
Yeah, you know, they, you know, at a certain level, I love the old Seagull, but
yeah.
It's not like it's a 60s J-45
yeah, right,
that I'm
right.
worried about.
Sure, sure. That's true. That's true enough. Well, man, we were talking last week about, you know, you're booking yourself, putting out your own records, doing the I asked you the question that, you know, kind of not what drove us when I was starting out was you thought maybe, hey, man, we'll get a big deal. We'll maybe get signed or something like that. You being kind of a decade younger than me are kind of coming at it from a different perspective. You're probably not expecting, hey, I'll just get some huge deal with Warner Brothers or something. So, you know, and you kind of said, hey, man, as long as I can make my living and grow my base and keep my revenue streams flowing, as long as my wife is a doctor, I'll keep it all rolling along. Nick told us he was getting married, so we congratulate him on that last week. But, man, what do you see man, how has this is a weird question for me to ask, but I went out to see the a show recently mm-hmm. with some guys, and I've seen this at my own shows a lot. You know, and I, it doesn't make me mad.
I cannot wait for you to ask me this question, Phil.
Well, because you know, it's really a relatively new thing. I've been doing it so long. When I was young, all we wanted to do was drink beer and go see bands.
Yeah.
And so we just would grab a beer and we'd stand on the front of the stage and watch the band. There was nothing else to do. There wasn't a TV on. I mean, the Black Cat Lounge in Austin. I mean, you know, it was just mm-hmm. you were there to just do whatever, watch whatever was going on, to be entertained by what was on the stage.
Right.
That was it. And now, of course, that's challenging with the smartphones. Mm-hmm. And, man, some of my most diehard fans, people I love, I know you have your fans as well. Yeah. And I'll look up there while I'm playing. I'm like, oh, there's old Joe or something. But man, a lot of the show, he's looking at his. Now, he might be taking my picture with his iPhone.
Sure.
And you know, tweeting it worldwide. I'm watching Phil. He's fantastic. Okay, I give you that. But nonetheless, while I'm telling a story between a song, he's looking down at his hand. He's typing. He's texting. And that's what everybody's doing. Right. I'm guilty of it. I do it. But I went to a show with a festival type deal with some bigger acts, and I kind of watched the crowd. I was like, man, I wonder if the same thing's going on. And man, it really was. It was really stunning, and it made me sad. It also made me feel kind of good, like, well, maybe it's just not at my shows.
I'm
like,
yeah.
You know, we used to go see this guy play, and we'd all just be riveted to the stage, and everyone was enjoying the show. I'm not saying no one was having fun, but there's definitely a. I just feel like it's more difficult to get people's attention. You know what I mean? Now, you haven't
Absolutely.
Been doing it quite as long as I have, but I don't know. How do you use technology or view it at your show, the smartphone? Is it an advantage, a disadvantage?
Well, you know, it's kind of the...
Do you notice it? You know?
Absolutely, you notice it. And it's kind of the atmosphere that some of these bars harbor in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I particularly love the listening shows.
Yeah.
I like a dinner show. You know, folks get served dinner and sit and watch the show. They paid a ticket to watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
There's no TVs in the room, and the phones, they're gone, you know, unless they're taking pictures and that kind of thing. That's my preference, of course. But, you know, I mean, every place you play nowadays, they've got TVs, and they've got other things to do aside from what's on the stage. And that just adds to what's going on as far as, like you said,
socially, yeah.
Socially.
That's just how people interact, you know? Yeah.
Nowadays.
Right.
Well, I try to take advantage of that when I do see that kind of thing.
You take out your phone and call them and say, hey, man, knock it off.
I should do that. That's not a bad idea. Just on the mic, hey, I noticed that you're on your phone.
Yeah, who is it?
But, you know, you do some of those promoting things at that point. For me, I'll say, hey, add us on Facebook while you're looking at your phones.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
Or,
it's just an undeniable presence in the room. It's almost like, and man, this, I remember when cell phones first came out, even before the smartphone and before texting, but when people had cell phones,
uh-huh.
Some of the older guys, I remember Springsteen Jonathan Redmond, an older punk guy that we did some shows with, the first thing they did was when they got on stage was really start griping about cell phones. Mm-hmm. And just like, hey, I don't want to see one, I don't want to hear one ringing, or I'm going to walk off the stage. And then they were kind of like, God, come on. You know, I was like this crotchety old guy. What's he telling me? And, but now as I get a little older, it, like I say, it doesn't bother me as much, but it does, I do sense it, you know? And so I'm like, well, either I'm getting old like these old guys, which is true, but there's also, it's also just gotten so much exponentially worse. I mean, these guys were upset just when someone would walk to the room and talk on the phone. They think that was rude. But now you've got just constant interaction going on. Absolutely. You know, I mean, and it's, man, I just wonder what the future is. It's just harder to get people. Now, the older crowds are better because they're used to the listening room and all that kind of thing. I don't know. It's just very challenging. I know there's not a question here. I'm just talking.
It's over. Rambling. I think it's society wide. Whether it's just looking at your phone,
yeah.
Or whether it's the fact that songs must be 3.5 minutes long or less to be on radio,
right?
Or whether it's the fact that, you know, commercials take up most of the time of TV air now than shows, and everything is 30 minutes long.
Right.
A 30-minute long sitcom. That's just the attention span, and it's kind of a chicken-egg type of quandary, you know? It makes you think, is it business? Is it the businesses and advertising and marketing that's creating this mentality and this kind of attention span in society, or is it society as a whole demanding that because their attention span is just generally smaller? So I don't know how to solve that, and I don't know.
Well, I guess,
just got to go with it. You know?
I guess my broader question maybe is this. Let me put it kind of in a different context, because this is what I'm – and this is occurring to me just as I sit here, so this thought may not be very well formed. But, you know, you had Mozart, Beethoven. What did they do? There was no recorded music. So if you wanted to hear their music, you bought a ticket to go sit in the opera house, the symphony hall, and they would come out with a piece of music. Here it comes. Da-na-na-na, and that's how people experienced music.
Right.
Well, when they came out with recorded, years later, they came out with recorded LPs, and people could hear that music anytime they wanted. You know, I'm not saying it did away with that. It certainly did not, but there was some sort of a quantum shift that occurred. Technology had somehow, so well, the only place they could hear it used to be the hall. Now they can hear it at home, albeit on a limited thing, but they didn't keep people from buying albums and phonographs just because the quality wasn't as good as sitting in the hall.
Right.
And people are always like, oh, MP3 sound like crap. People are going to listen to their CDs. Well, no. People have always, people will use cassette tapes instead of vinyl. They don't sound as good, but they're portable. You can carry them around.
Right.
People will always go for whatever's the convenient,
absolutely
cool thing. They don't care about the quality as much as all of us musicians do. So,
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
That's just a fact of life. Maybe someone, people who did vaudeville plays and things like that, when movies took off, those theaters were now not playhouses. They just had a screen there and they'd show movies. Television certainly changed the way entertainment was experienced on radio. And so I guess we're at the very, very, very early stages here, but you're in a bar, you're in a band, you're on stage. This worked for a long time, since probably the Beatles. I mean, since guitar bands came into being. And I just, as I was at this show and my own shows, I just wonder if something fundamental, you start, the technology comes in and an old form starts to lose an audience a bit. Mm-hmm. We still have symphonies. We still have plays. We still have radio shows. Where there's dialogue, kind of an old, on a public radio or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing like back in the 50s. You know what I'm saying? It just changes. I wonder if there's a fundamental shift going on, maybe,
this is for
live music.
This is what I think, you know? I agree.
It's starting to die out. I don't mean to, but in some ways, maybe, could it be?
Well, you know, this is my viewpoint on it. There are artists that sell out Billy Bob's and have 5,000 people come to the show.
Right.
There are artists that can't even come close to selling out a 200-person capacity venue.
Right.
But at a certain level, only a small percentage of those 5,000 people there to see that big artist are there to see that big artist. I think that a larger percentage is there to hook up and see people there and have a good time. They're there for the spectacle more than they are for the music.
But, I mean, couldn't you say that about Michael Jackson tours back in the
era?
Absolutely. I don't know. I mean,
absolutely.
How many people were riveted? Of course, we were all amazed by Michael Jackson, though.
Right.
It's harder to explain when there's that many people to see somebody that you're like, man, sing very good.
Exactly.
You know?
That's my point. My point is that the shows have not necessarily impressed me lately for the people,
That's kind of my other point.
You know?
Have we just seen it all? Have, you know, I mean, whereas maybe in the pre-texting, pre-YouTube era, when I played a guitar solo behind my head or with my teeth like I do, you know, you'd get some amazed look by some drunk guy in the front row. And now you get the sense that they kind of glance up and glance back down at their phone. I'm like, well, he just saw some 4-year-old kid in Japan play it much better than I could ever.
Right.
It's what I'm doing that special or unique anymore. It's just kind of like, well, I don't know. There's just so many bands. There's so I use the example. I've got a 14-year-old daughter, and I apologize to my listeners out there. They hear me use this example a lot, but I want to throw it at you.
Sure.
And, you know, when I mentioned Michael Jackson in the mid-'80s and Van Halen, you either were at the show or you weren't there.
Yeah.
You either had the shirt on the next day. That's it. There was nowhere to go watch footage from the gig.
Right.
It was just, dude, I was there. It was amazing. That's it. Or you were left out in the cold. I mean, so when those bands came, you know, the big bands of the day, Michael Jackson, Van Halen, Garth Brooks when he started out, man, we were just, in middle school, high school, we were just dead to go to concerts. My parents and I had many a row discussion, just you're too young to go to a concert. There's people drinking. You know, it was just something you had to grow into, but in high school we just went out to Starplex out there by Fair Park and saw whoever it was there, man. Bought a $12 lawn seat. Yeah, even in middle school though, I was obsessed with bands, because I listened to a lot of music, and my kids listened to a lot of music, but they never asked me about concerts. You know, Foster the People and stuff out here, they're playing in the house. I'm like, cool, man, do these guys, they ever tour? And they just kind of look at me blankly like, what do you mean? You know, they come to town, we can all go to the concert. And they're just looking at me kind of like, why would we do that? Like, huh? You know, I'm just like, now maybe there's like a Lady Gaga. Maybe they would kind of like want to go do that. But there's not, they don't seem real. And I would say a lot of guys that are like, you know, late teens, early 20s, haven't seen a lot of shows and don't go see a lot of shows.
Right.
But listen to a lot of music and know a lot about music. I don't know. Have you experienced that?
I have
very much.
Let me tell you the age range at my concerts as I've started, and this may have something to do with the type of music I play too. I'm not really playing a whole bunch of beer swilling, let's party type of music. It's more songwriter stuff, it's that kind of song, that kind of atmosphere. But I have a ton of fans. The majority of them are 40 and older.
Yeah, yeah,
and they're the ones that continue to come out.
Well, they're like, you know, me. They grew up in that environment.
Exactly.
Hey, man,
they
got a night out. What do you
want
to do? Let's go see a band, you know?
Right.
I told you I'm going to see the Jayhawks tonight.
Right.
But I'll be the youngest guy there. I mean, you know, a couple of other guys. But I just wonder if these young bands, I mean, have that kind of, I think a big part of it is too, you're just getting the single. See, my girls just have the one Foster the People, you know, all the other kids.
Oh my gosh.
Run, baby, run faster than my boy. They've got that. That's bigger than the band. That song is big. They're not believers in the band. They haven't sat there looking at an album cover.
They love that song.
They haven't listened to the whole album.
Right.
They don't, you know what I'm saying? That's just one song they downloaded out of like 20. That day with their iTunes gift card they got for their birthday.
It's
just one thing. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't warrant, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, it's just, it's different. Whereas we would listen to Van Halen album just till it wore out. I mean, the same one. I mean, you know, cause there's weren't a lot of albums, you know, you can only buy maybe one album for your birthday. You bought in 1984 or whatever, and God, you just knew every you just knew the whole thing. So when their concert was coming, you're like, dude, I gotta be there. I can't not.
Right.
So I don't. It's just changing, and I guess I get a little saddened when people say, man, it'll come back, or these. And I wonder, I kind of think about Beethoven in the symphony hall, and who the first guy who wrote a great opera, a great symphony, said, hey, everybody come to my symphony. And mm-hmm. people shrugged and went, dude, I got my Beethoven albums at home and my Bach. Yeah, how come I need to come listen to you?
Right.
I mean, what are you going to do that those guys didn't do? You're still sitting up here with a bunch of violins and cellos. Eh, we've heard it. You know, I come hear my band. You got drums and a guitar, you know, playing G, C, and D. You know, what the hell? I'll stay mm-hmm. home. You know, I mean, what are they giving them that's just fundamentally, you know.
This could be a good thing, though.
Yeah.
This could be.
Again, I'm not trying to be negative. I know. I'm just trying to point it out.
But this could be the beginning, then.
All right. Let me have it.
Of music in general as an art form
mm-hmm.
looking less and less like a smart business opportunity or a good business opportunity.
Right.
Weeding out those unfortunate artists that we may have some sort of down look towards. Right.
Because there's no other reason to do it than you love to do it.
Right.
That's it. That's
the only reason.
Yeah, the only reason to stay out there, yeah.
Because it's what you do and it's your passion and it's what drives you, because it ain't for the money.
Right.
And there's some of us that obviously have figured that out.
Right.
You know
something interesting along those very same lines, I had a conversation with the owner of one of the owners of the Katy Trail Ice House. Some friends of mine were shooting this TV show down there. I was hanging out, and he was talking about how Dallas, Texas, didn't have a big brewery. Doesn't have a brewery like Shiner, you know. And he said, "Man, we need to have a brewery here." And his bar sells millions of beers. We're talking about all these crazy beers there are nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Man, you know, there used to just be Coors, Bud, and Miller. Mm-hmm. That was it. It was three beers. You know, it's like three channels on your TV set." And now you've got a bajillion, right?
Sure.
You just got a choice everywhere. Just some
stuff you
never heard of. Some monk in Belgium makes one bottle of this a year, man. You know, whatever. It was the more rare, the better, right? And I go, man, it's just a new phenomenon. And this guy pointed out, he said, man, but I watched this documentary on Prohibition, the Ken Burns thing, which I hadn't seen, but I really want to see it. He goes, you know, before Prohibition, that's how all beers were. It was all brewery. Everyone had a brewery, and they just made beer for the local people, and they were in business, and that was it. You didn't sell your beer in California if you made it in New York. It was all – Prohibition put all those guys out of business, but Miller, Coors, and Budweiser were big enough. They had the industry to, like, survive.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Prohibition went away, they were the only three companies who could put beer in every store in the country and start selling it. And so – he goes, really, it's not an evolution. We're kind of just going back to the way it was.
Got it.
But to your point, yeah, maybe in the 60s and 70s you had a few bands. But, you know, before then, I'm talking way back, music was regional. It was local.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talks about New Orleans music or, you know, music coming out of Appalachia or something. It just had a certain sound. But they didn't tour the country with it. They didn't,
right.
And maybe we're going back to that. You just kind of, if you're a musician, you play locally,
mm-hmm.
drink your local beer, and that's just who you are. There's no, you know, but all of us grew up thinking, man, I need to tour the world.
Sure.
You know, I don't know. Maybe that is good.
I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's not my ambition to tour the world. It never has been. I guess it would be cool, but it wouldn't be something in my personality that I'd want to do for ages, you know.
For the sake of doing it. Yeah.
Well,
if your music leads you there, great. I mean, you know,
you'll
get that email from some dude. Having his 35th birthday party in Montana.
Yeah.
He used to go to A&M. Just, come on, Nick, we'll fly you up.
We'll
and you're
fly
like,
you
all
up
right,
and
cool.
I say, why
you
not?
Know?
Exactly.
Yeah, take my guitar and, you know, we'll do it. Well, who knows, man? Maybe we are, maybe just kind of going back to just, because I've seen that. I pointed out that, you know, maybe in the 90s it was a bigger deal when me and the band or Jack would go to, I don't know, Lubbock, and we were, but I was from Austin, and it's people, oh, hey, he's from Austin, or,
sure.
You know, and now when I go there, man, there's the Blue Light's been sold out the whole week, man, with local bands, the Jim Smith Band,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the Red Shahan, he recorded a record, and
Red's a good guy.
And Brandon Adams, and like they've got their own scene up there. They got
they
make their own records. They're good. They got their fans. They know everybody in town. The place is packed wall to wall. I mean,
right.
They don't need to import me. Like, let's get Bill in here so we can get some people in the door. In fact, there's fewer people out there that know me than know Red. I'm just like, dude,
right.
I ought to be the opening act out here. I can't. You're competing with that more. You know what I'm saying?
If more towns did that, Like Lubbock did that and kind of developed their local scene.
But there is that in a lot of places, you know? I think, is my point, is that, yeah, you do get to Houston and Corpus and College Station. And there's a lot of bands that draw well in that, you know. But, you know, I knew a country band up in Illinois. Just, man, you know, we play country music, so we would do really good down in Texas where they love country music, right? And I'm just thinking, dude, stay up here in the Midwest. I mean, you know, right. There's eight. We already got you a million times over down in Texas.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're not going to be able to tell you apart from Boland or Kevin Fowler.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I'm just saying, dude, I wouldn't go down there and try to get those guys dates. I mean, God,
right.
That's crazy.
You're not going to be storming down any doors.
No, no.
Yeah.
So where are we all headed, man? Where are we headed?
You know, we all got our own path, man. And so we're just headed down that path.
We're all just creating our own universe, huh?
Man, that's just all I can see it. Otherwise, you know, it just drives you crazy. And you go, and your common sense side of your brain goes, you are stupid. What are you doing?
Yeah. You're absolutely right, though, that the music's all that matters because... Yeah, there's just not that goal of, hey, we're going to get this manager and he's going to get us a big deal. And
mm-hmm.
You might have little deals. You'll meet guys who, hey, I'm working on this commercial. Would you be interested in doing some music?
Right.
Those opportunities will come your way, but you kind of got to be independent and own your stuff to make those profitable. And just so all we're working on, you and me, is just kind of keeping our schedules full, booking those private parties,
mm-hmm.
writing music. And, you know, that's kind of it. And then hoping maybe it get, you know, somebody somewhere sees a role for us and
right.
somewhere.
That's my goal, man. I'm just otherwise I would say it. I'm just spinning my tires. But I think that the more and more I play and the more I get my music out there and the more people I meet that are interested in it, the more opportunities come. So it's just increasing your network to the point to where every week you
right.
get this opportunity from somebody in a different part of your network saying, hey, I've got this commercial I want you to write music for. Hey,
right.
I've got this new artist that I want you to write with.
Yeah.
Or I've got this new artist that I want you to produce, for instance, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And those are just all different revenue streams that come in from a financial standpoint that you just got to pull from because there's not just that one deal anymore. It just isn't. There's what? Like, there's 10 in each genre that make those millions and millions of dollars,
yeah.
and they stick around for about 10 years each, you know?
Yeah.
There's just not going to be another Keith Urban and Toby Keith and Carrie Underwood and Taylor Swift and that kind of thing coming up in the next decade.
Yeah, maybe
they're
going
to stick around until...
They'll be few and far between, yeah, that's right.
It's just not going to happen like that. So
well, gosh, we're just sitting here with a what does it all mean conversation with Nick Verzosa. But you know what? I know that all you guys out there listening, you fans, you musicians out there, guys have recorded in the studio. I hope I know a lot of y'all have had the same conversations. A lot of you guys just, man, what are we doing? We're trying to figure it out here on the podcast, making headway, of course, as always, with our friend Nick Verzosa stopping by. Thanks for hanging out with us, Nick.
Always a good time.
Great to have you back here. You're welcome anytime on the podcast.
All right, man.
Well, that is our show for this week. Be good to each other out there, folks. Come see the full band. We'll be playing. Man, we're doing that live recording in Corpus Christi, December the 3rd, first Saturday in December. Coming up here, very excited. So we'll see you at that show. Don't miss it. And also download that REM EP. Me and Rodney Parker are doing REM songs. iTunes, $5. Check it out. Get in the know. That's all the time we have this week, folks. Be good to each other out there. We'll see you next week. Much tougher. And the train conductor says